and a long time ago.
DJ Envy with Adultery.
Yeah, and then Charlamagne's people sent him a cease and desist letter.
Which I don't understand. These guys all make a living about critiquing society, critiquing sports. And then when somebody fires back at them and you've been critiquing this said person, now you're going to send a cease and desist letter. And that's what Kwame Brown was talking about. He goes, a lot of these guys are puppets for these major corporations. What people don't know, Kwame Brown owns his land. He's a millionaire, not just from NBA money, but from enterprising himself. And he's speaking about that. He spoke about the fact Steven Jackson spends money on women. And I'm not, you know, I have friends that spend money on women. What you do with your money is your business. But none of you guys have a youth center in your name. Nope. None of you guys have like a promise school like LeBron. I know Jalen Rose has one, but he doesn't have to publicize it. But a lot of these guys are doing things, but they're not improving our culture. And we and I have this debate all the time that when you become a prominent person, figurehead, and you're black, do you have a certain responsibility to come back to your culture and help your community? I think you do a little bit if your community is hurting, and it's not hurting you to take a little bit of your riches to enrich your community.
No, I totally agree, because I feel like we're all here on earth to do something. We all have a purpose. Yeah. I feel like our purpose is to give some type of service back to people. And you do that in whatever way that you see fit. So my whole thing is, because I was going to say after that too, like more people enter the chat, like Funkmaster Flex and Kevin Hunter. So then it's just becoming a mess. And I feel like they all went about it the wrong way, because they're kind of just wanting to get back at each other for like stuff that happened.
You remember
way back.
You remember when you and I first became friends, it was around the time Big Brother just started. And you remember they had that guy from Harlem, Will? And never again did they ever put a real, you know, I was going to say the N-word, a real black dude, a real colored brother on the show again. Never on a reality show, unless you're watching Love and Hip Hops or Love and Hip Atlanta. But they on like the big like Survivors, Big Brother, they don't put real dudes to talk real stuff. Because Kwame Brown's hitting them with facts. And what I don't understand, Louis, is that you guys talk about someone, they reply back to you guys, and now you guys are in your feelings talking about it's jokes, talking about, oh, you're in your feelings. At what point can a person defend themselves? And what I understand, like, we're all broadcasters, you, myself, and all those other people on CKT. When I came into this business, I understood that if I'm going to critique and speak on people, I have to be prepared for them to hit back. It's not a one-sided conversation. Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson could never do their podcast. They need to change the name if they're going to continue doing it. Because what they should have done is invite Kwame Brown onto the show. He wanted to come on the show, and he's like, yeah, I'll come, and they won't invite him. So they're not real broadcasters to me. They don't want the smoke.
Well, they're not. Well, okay, I'm not going to say that, but I know that all the smoke, they had some legal issues with that name already. So maybe they should change it. But I just feel like in that moment, like, especially people, celebrities that have been talked down about or made fun of for years on end, like, people sometimes need to stop and like think back to what that person may have been going through throughout all these years of being called certain names. Mm-hmm. Because like we said, there is a reason, like there was so much pressure put on him that for you to have all of that on you and then for it to turn out not the way that everybody imagined or even the way that you imagine, like that's really tough to carry that. So I do understand why he just flipped and he's saying all these things, but I feel like it's a lesson. Like the NBA could have stepped in. Like,
yeah,
the man still deserves his roses for all the things that he's done.
He was in the league for over 10 years. Like, you know, obviously, like, I'm a big NBA fan. Like, I didn't notice him, but I knew he was on teams. It's not like he was in the NBA for like a year or two and he left. He had like a 10 plus NBA career. He didn't have crazy numbers, but he did contribute. Like, he was in the league for over 10 years. You know what I mean? Some guys can't even last 2 years. He lasted over 10 years, right? And he got into the league at 17 years old, bought his mom a house, put on the golf course. And that should be the dream, to uplift your family and your situation.
But see, they should have recognized those things as well.
But let me ask you this. Like, imagine the... I don't even know what word to use for it, because I don't want Kwame to come for me. But imagine the fortitude that Kwame Brown had to hold all this in for almost 2 decades. Imagine the discipline you need to have as a person within yourself to hear all these people talk about you. Stephen A. did all kind of school tours, talk, mentioning name, using you as the butt of the jokes, and you holding this all in. At certain point, you have a breaking point. You have to let people know at sometimes that you bite too.
No, exactly. We see it all the time. Like, even like kind of switching away, like even with Bow Wow, Bow Wow gets made fun of all the time. So I understand when he goes on his rants. I get it. But then also, too, Bell's been through a lot as well. Being like,
he put, Larina, hold on. He puts himself in some of those positions, though, too, Larina.
You knew some of the things, like, I'm not going to say it now, but if you knew some of the things that he had to go through,
yeah, for sure,
you would understand why he is the way that he is.
But he's a legend, though. Bauer's a legend.
No, he is a legend, but people don't give him his flowers. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff, of course, that is wrong with what he does within his relationships and stuff like that. And some of, like, he has a big ego, but I kind of understand why because of the stuff that he's been through. But I will let you continue that conversation on with
Alex.
Later on. But I did want to touch on Nick Cannon because
when I see you smirking like that, I know you got something juicy. I know you got something good. What you got for me?
So Nick Cannon, love Nick Cannon. I think he is amazing. He's a genius. He's expecting his 7th child.
Well, he got money like that, so he can afford that. That's a lot of kids. With who?
So this time it's with Wildin' Out model Alyssa Scott.
I knew somebody at Wildin' Out had to get the love. Them girls is beautiful on Wildin' Out. I ain't gonna hold you.
So, but that's been a running joke that the girls like how they get their position on the show or whatever. But anyways, so she posted a pic of herself being pregnant on social media with the caption "Zen S Cannon." Somebody commented asking if Nick is a dad, and she confirmed with like the heart emojis, like the face and the hearts or whatever. So that's just confirming that he is the father. But then also back in March, news broke out that Nick Cannon was welcoming a set of twins with DJ Abby De La Rosa. So he also has a set of twins on the way.
That's confirmed? So he has a set of twins and another single baby coming as well?
Yes.
And that brings the total to what? 12?
Oh, this is a part of the 7. But because it's been moving really fast. So then before that, in March, he just welcomed a daughter with a Brittany Bell a few months ago. So Brittany Bell is one of his baby mothers. They had a son previously, Golden Cannon. And then he has the set of twins with Mariah.
Shout out to Nick, boy. The seed is good. That's good because, you know, he's gonna impart on his kids all of his entrepreneurship, all of his creativity. So we're going to have some more Nick Cannon products coming for a long time. It's a lot of kids, though. Money's long. He's like Future. He has more kids than Future. I don't think nobody has more kids than Future.
I don't know how many kids Future has.
That's my guy. We don't play enough Future songs on the show.
But, yeah, but the kids are happening quite fast and frequently with Nick Cannon. But congratulations to him and the baby mothers. He also just broke up with one of his girlfriends.
Damn. You say that like he's doing a Seeking Sister Wife episode. You're like one of his girlfriends.
Well, I don't know because like for Valentine's Day, he sent them all the same type of gifts, like the balloons.
Smart. Economical. You know, he got that Costco bundle price. That's smart.
So it's confusing, but congratulations to them. Right. He also just announced that he is having a daytime talk show, The Nick Cannon Show, which will be starting in the fall. So.
Oh, man. Shout out to you, Larina. Great entertainment. Thank you for the community updates. Things is happening, boy. Much on my city. We're going to play some dope music. Keep it locked. Coming up next, we're going to talk some sports, some NBA finals. The boy, No Status Capo, join us here on The Morning Detour.
She's a runner. The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
When she in a bar, a track star who ain't never seen the finish line. Can't confide or commit, she's scared to trust somebody. On your mind, guess I go, she about to cut somebody. Do what it takes, do what's gonna make it last. She can take the pain and come with that. Hit the brakes, but it's too late, she fast. Once she set a pace, she don't look back. She's a runner, she's a track star. She gon' run away when it gets hard. She can't take the pain, she can't get scarred. She hurt anyone that gets involved. Don't wanna commit, why take it this far? She gon' do the race, just not this one. Love is a game you used to cheer for. When I was down to talk, you weren't here for. She's a liar, she a capper. She do anything for
with a black card. She giving you pain with a black heart. Should've never let that shit get that far. It's always been games with you. Keeping scoring, changing moves. I was all for it, but lately you show me that side, that crazy you. And you can get the pack and all of your bags. You can leave the racks with all of them tags. Don't do your thing and don't look back. Damn, girl, you fast.
She's a runner, she's a track star. She gon' run away when it gets hard. She can't take the pain, she can't get scarred. She hurt anyone that gets involved. Don't wanna commit, why take it this far? She gon' do the race, just not this one. Love is a game you used to cheer for. When I was down to talk, you weren't here for.
I say, don't you run from me. Don't take my love for granted, cause you know it can get ugly. She's a runner, she's a track star. Don't run away when it get hard, love. I can tell that you ain't never had a gangster. No one wear that. He ain't never tell you thank you. How you wear that? You should get a new Rafe. I'm sly when you tell me it's convenient. You know I got the Glock up in the Guinea. Grant a couple wishes like a genie. She gon' keep on running back if she got access. Got my dick hard like it's hard to be a black man. I cut off and put my feelings in a trash can. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I guess all this love was just too much love.
She's a runner, she's a track star. She gon' run away when it gets hard. She can't take the pain, she can't get scarred. She hurt anyone that gets involved. Don't wanna commit, but take it this way.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Yes, Montreal, my city. Welcome back. It's the Morning Detour. Weezy Moon Chase in here. After being on my sports analyst, Mr. No Status Capo, I want to talk NBA playoffs. Listen, y'all know we're biased at the Morning Detour. I'm a big Laker fan. Lakers finally tied the series. I know we're recording this on the Thursday. I know Lakers are going to play tonight. Hopefully we win again and go up 2-1 versus the Suns. Magic Johnson called LeBron the best player in basketball. I think LeBron was looking like he was just picking his moments in game two there against the Suns. What were some of your takeaways from that game?
LeBron is the best player in basketball. So, I mean, there's no question about that.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking to my thing. He does look like he is getting old, but at the same time, like, you got to respect the vets. You got to respect the vets. And if you're a LeBron caliber player, who's touching into like that old man strength, that old man wisdom, and he's able to kind of like be great at certain points just to solidify wins, he deserves all the praise in the world. And Lakers are a scary team with that guy.
Boy, yeah, man, definitely so, man. Like, yo, LeBron hit a fadeaway jumper there in the fourth quarter. I'm like, okay, you tapping into your Jordan bag. He did that closeout three, even though the Lakers were already up ahead. But, you know, he really put the nail on the coffin there. Does it feel kind of – I feel so bad for Chris Paul because Chris Paul had such a great scene. He flipped the Suns. The Suns were in purgatory. He made them a number two in the Western Conference. But Chris Paul always seems to get really hurt in the playoffs. It happened when he was in Houston with Harden. They had Golden State in the game seven. Chris Paul got hurt. And Lord knows what could have happened if Chris Paul played in the game alongside Harden. They probably would have knocked out Golden State. Do you think Chris Paul's legacy will be marred by this forever? Because I just feel – I don't know how many goals he has at this, Alex. He's old as well.
How old is he? He's about like 36.
Yeah,
as old as LeBron.
He doesn't have much goals, like a strong playoff run as him as the point guard leader of a team. How do you feel about Chris Paul? Like,
CP3 is a point guard, you understand? And he's a legend, and he deserves all the praise in the world. The only people that's going to mar his name are idiots like Stephen A who want to validate people on championships and not on what these actual players produce. Like, he's done great things for several great teams. He's always been a top-tier talent wherever he goes. He's been a great leader. He's been the opponent you don't want to face.
Yeah.
Like, he deserves to be praised. And what he did for the Suns, granted, I don't give him full credit because Devin Booker was on a tear on his perfect
record. Oh, he's the best player on the floor. He's the best player in the series right now. Devin Booker's the best player.
For sure. But it's hard for me to say Chris Paul did all of that, right? He did. He's like a catalyst for Devin Booker and the Phoenix Suns.
Okay.
And I'll give him that. And it sucks. It sucks because you want that guy on the floor because he's a constant threat at scoring, passing, even rebounding, and definitely defending.
No, he's a quintessential floor general. He's definitely in my top five point guards of all times, even though he doesn't have the championships. And a lot of people have put Steph Curry ahead of him because Steph Curry has kind of changed the whole makeup of the NBA with the whole 3-point line. Let me switch gears a little bit here for you. Now, I feel bad because I used to hear about this guy, Luka, for years. And it wasn't until I watched him intensely in the bubble. I'm like, yo, who is this guy? The Clippers are down as of today, Thursday morning. The Clippers are down 2 games to Dallas. And I'm like, what's going on here? I thought Kawhi and PG was the best defensive backcourt since Jordan and Pippen. What's going on here? Do you think they're going to win? Like, what's going on? Is Dallas going to sweep the Clippers? And if so, what? And if so, okay, I'll give you the full thing. Is Dallas going to sweep the Clippers? And if so, should the Clippers just blow this team up? Because Kawhi, I think his contract is up this summer.
You're asking me a difficult question. I love Luka. And he basically took somewhat of the Kobe path where you learn a lot of European basketball and then came over here and just excelled. Mm-hmm. So I love that path he's taken, and he's thriving in it. Oh, yo, Clippers, man. Like, I have no faith in Lou Will. Not Lou Will. What's the name? What's the coach? Ty Lue.
But Ty Lue won with LeBron. You don't believe in Ty Lue?
No. LeBron won with Ty Lue.
Yo, Alex, I ain't let you play my boy Ty like that. Ty Lue almost had a nervous breakdown. His health was messed up. That's how intense... Being a coach of LeBron and a championship team, Alex. Stop. He put his health on the line, Alex.
He contributed. I'm not saying he wasn't part of the win. I'm just saying for him to be the head of a tough, stubborn guy like PG and a very quiet guy like Kawhi, a loudmouth in Beverly, you lost a lot from last year. And you don't have a guy like LeBron that can coach on the floor.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have... Well, I guess they have Rondo. But at the same time, Rondo's new to this environment.
Everybody's waiting for playoff Rondo. He's kind of like that interchangeable fix. You could just put him up like a spare tire. So we're still waiting for playoff Rondo to show his head because he was on the floor for the fourth quarter for game one. And he didn't impact it to the point that they won the game.
You have to let Rondo control the floor. It can't be PG. It can't be Kawhi. It has to be Rondo if you want playoff Rondo's control.
Nah, PG was showing himself, but Luka was just answering everything they're dishing out. And I thought Luka couldn't shoot. They do call him Baby Bird. But, Alex, let me switch gears here a little bit for you. New York is doing some good things. They tied up the series the other night there with Atlanta. I think they're going
to
play again.
Shout out to D-Rose.
Yeah, Derrick Rose, boy, the resurgence. I love the D-Rose story. I love the Carmelo story. I love stories of guys that were... going to the NBA oblivion, going to the NBA graveyard, and it kind of resurges their career. But how do you feel about a Philadelphia fan dumping popcorn on Russell Westbrook the other night? And then you had a New York fan seemingly spitting towards Trae Young. Like, what's up with the fans? Like, y'all just got access back to the arena, and this is how you guys are acting?
Yeah, these guys are stupid, and I wish they did that again. I wish them Indiana and Detroit guys did the same shit. Like, these guys, like, go into the stands and go sort them out. This is ridiculous. Like, what are you doing? like you feel mad safe to be dumping popcorn on this supreme athlete.
Yeah, Russell. You know, one thing I love, you know, besides the beautiful, you know, it's beautiful what Russell Westbrook does with the triple-doubles and all of that. But what I love the most about Russell Westbrook, he gives it all. Like if his last game was his last game, you can never say Russell Westbrook has ever cheated the game of basketball. He goes a million miles an hour, and that's what I love the most about him. Before I let you go here, Alex.
Let me touch on that real quick.
Yeah.
I have to give it up to Doc in Philadelphia.
Oh, Alex, talk about it. I thought Doc was the problem in L.A.
Hey, man. Hey, he's not. He's clearly not. Because they have Russ under control. Without even kind of like you could feel it. You could see the difference in how the players are reacting to Russ not being able to get to his spots, not being able to get to the rim.
Yeah.
Ben Simmons, I mean, if they didn't make the vote for Defensive Player of the Year yet, he definitely should get it.
He can't do nothing else. You know, he's a good passer. He's a good floor leader, but he can't shoot. It bothers me.
It bothers me too, but he gets it done.
As of the day we're recording this, Philly's up 2-0 against the Washington Wizards with Russell Westbrook and Beal. I think LA needs Beal. We could use Beal so beautifully in LA, man. My Lakers could use Beal so good, but shout out to Doc, man. You know, I don't hear enough NBA analysts hype up the great job Doc did to go from the Clippers to go to the Eastern Conference and then to take, because a lot of people are kind of shaky on the whole Embiid and what's his name there, the point guard there, and Simmons. A lot of people are kind of apprehensive, like, oh, is this duo really working? And then Doc comes, and now they're the number one position in the East. So it's a good look. Philly's
NBA
up 2-0.
Analysts just like to criticize. They just like to criticize. They don't want to praise anybody. They like to criticize. You want to hear some praise? Go talk to Charles Barkley, Shaq, Ernie, and Kenny. Those guys give praise, and they give people their credit. Anybody else, they just look for drama. They look for issues. They look for to make coaching adjustments and player adjustments. But they can't do it themselves.
Let me ask you this. Me and Lorena were just talking about in the segment before about Kwame Brown. I'd like to get your thoughts on it. My producer, Blackstar, said, Kwame Brown is the hero we don't deserve, but the hero we need. Me personally, I think Kwame Brown has been spitting actual facts. I think for a long time, he's been the butt of jokes. And yeah, if people come for you, you should have a right to answer back to them.
I love the fact that Kwame Brown is responding to these guys. I mean, these guys sit on the at their table comfortably,
and talk
shit about other players, and players can't respond, otherwise they get fined or some kind of dumb shit.
Or you get a cease and desist letter. Like, well, you talked about me, I talk back to you, spitting facts, not even like defaming you or cursing you out, and the Breakfast Club sends a cease and desist letter? That's crazy. You guys aren't real broadcasters then. They should have invited him to the
podcast. They don't
like
the freedom of speech. They don't want that. They don't want the freedom of speech. They don't want all the smoke.
No, they can't call their podcast that anymore, because I do my podcast Running with Wolves and I discuss a lot of polarizing issues, and at no point do I talk about something and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to invite said person or a person I represent that particular topic. Like, if you want a real back and forth, you have to bring them on. They have to bring them on the show, but obviously they denied Kwame Brown's request. Like, I understand you don't talk about me, but you won't bring me on to defend myself. That seems kind of one-sided. It seems kind of disingenuous.
Well, I think eventually Matt Barnes might have invited Kwame to the show, but at this point, Kwame said, no, he's not with that. And at the same time, like, all of them are apologizing now.
Nah, I don't want no apologies. Like,
no, I don't want it either.
They said it with their chest, Alex. They're backtracking. Listen, man, if you can get up there on the mic and you can critique things, stand firm on your affirmations. If someone proves you wrong, you can show, hey, listen, man, you know what, Alex, I was wrong, you were right. But, like, they were live clowning him, and just because he bit back now you guys want to say sorry and talk about you guys are making jokes. Those are not jokes.
No, they weren't. They're personal. They're taking a shot at the man's character. Oh. They're taking a shot at the man's abilities. And he responded, and I think he's well within his right to do so. I think it was very aggressive.
I say he's very aggressive. But you know, Alex, if you were the butt of jokes for 20 years in pop culture and in basketball circles, I think you would respond the same way with poems and books and a three-part short documentary. But don't let me hold you. Kwame Brown is the hero we don't deserve, but the hero we need. No status cap. I want to appreciate you. Till next week, we'll see how the first round kind of shakes off, and then we'll talk about round two next week.
Okay.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Looking for an adventure under the northern lights in the land of the midnight sun? Schools across the Northwest Territories and Nunavut are hiring French-speaking educators. Join our Teach North virtual job fair to hear about this unique opportunity. The job fair will have webinars, prizes, and a chance to speak one-on-one with employers looking to hire. It's taking place online May 31st. Register on jfairs.com. With the participation of the Government of Canada.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
It's the Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Lorena, and I'm here with a very special woman who has her own streaming service, which is so cool. So I'm happy to welcome Deshauna Spencer this morning of Quelle TV. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. Did I pronounce that properly?
It's Quelle.
Quelle. Okay, Quelle. I got to remember that. Quelle.
It's okay. I used to say it wrong too. So it was my company.
Okay, because I don't know. When I first saw it, I thought about like Talib Quelle. So that's how I'm pronouncing it. But I'm like, I don't know if that's the right way.
It's not. So, when I launched the company, I used to call it Quelle TV, like Talib Quelle. And then we did a commercial. And we kept saying, Quelle TV, Quelle TV. And a bunch of people from Kenya who speak fluent Swahili were like, no, you're saying it wrong. You guys always jack our culture. I'm like, I'm black too. Like, I'm not a colonizer. What's going on? So we basically had to shut it down, take the commercial off of Instagram, wow, redo it and edit it to make sure we have the right singing. So yeah. So you're not alone.
And what does that mean, actually?
It means truth in Swahili.
Oh, okay. See, that's good to know. I didn't know that either. I knew there probably was a meaning behind it, but I had no clue. So first, if you could just describe what is Kweli TV for everybody that hasn't heard about this yet.
So we are a digital platform, basically a streaming service that celebrates Black stories from around the world. So we have independent films and documentaries, web shows, children's programming, animation, everything you can name from North America, Africa, Latin America, the Caribbean, Europe, Australia, Asia. So we're everywhere, as I tell people, and we want to celebrate those stories. And that's basically, you know, what we do in a nutshell. People call us the Black Netflix. I don't typically like that term, but if you think about, you know, what we do, we stream videos and movies from film festivals. And so we're similar in that sense.
I think it's because people find it easier to compare something to something that's familiar to them. So I think when something just comes up and they find it really great, they try to compare it to, you know, another establishment or brand or organization that's great. So, but I think you're going to carving out your own lane. So I think that whole comparison to Netflix thing will go away, because I checked out the site and I do like that it has shows, documentaries, everything from like around the world. It's not just US, because you are US based, but it's from all over. So I thought that was super cool. And because this just came on my radar, actually. I think I started following maybe late 2019 or like through 2020. But I know this is, of course, an idea that you had for years. And I actually heard that in the beginning, you did a pitch competition where, unfortunately, you didn't win, but you did ask the organizers, like, why didn't I win, just to get some feedback. And they were just saying that they didn't think, like, streaming services was going to be, like, a long-term thing, which now, looking at it, is so crazy that they said that.
I know it is.
But how did you keep on going? Because I find a lot of times when we have these ideas and people don't see our vision, we kind of take their word for it because we look at them sometimes as the experts. So how did you keep going with that, with your idea, and, like, you know, turn it into fruition?
So I'll be honest, like, when I first got the news, they're like, oh, yeah, we're not sure about the future stream. I was like, am I wrong? Is this not going to be something? Because at the time, it's literally just Netflix and Hulu. Like, even HBO, like, no one else, it wasn't on their radar. I think there may be HBO Go or something, but it was really more of a place for their subscribers to the cable channel to watch something online. It wasn't really as fancy prancy as HBO Max is today. And so I did a question. I was like, you know, maybe I got this wrong. But I also end up having, like, tell people this Job moment where a lot of crazy things happen, where my aunt passed away, and then 2 months later, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And I moved back to Memphis. I'm from Memphis, Tennessee originally. I live in the DC area. Helped my mom with my dad. He's still with us, thankfully. He's been cancer-free now for many years. And then I come back here to the DC area, and I get sick. I have a bunch of fibroids, and my dad was then admitted to the hospital. He was there for like 6 months. My dog became paralyzed. It was just like everything that could really go wrong just went wrong like every other month. And Kweli TV was literally the furthest thing from my mind. I was just thinking about keeping my dad alive and just trying to get myself better. And so once things started to get better, I would say 2 years later, there was another competition, and the idea for Kweli TV came back in my head. And at the time, I had an online magazine. And so I've been working on this magazine for years and not really getting some traction, but just not enough for me to feel like this is it. And I think, too, when you talk about, like, you know, why did you continue on? I'm also, like, a really stubborn person. Like, I hate, like, failure. I think we all hate failure, but, like, I really, like, you know, because I remember, like, when I was in high school, went to college, and people were like, you're going to be, you probably won't make it, you know, I might be pregnant by, you know, you hear these very negative things about people assuming that you won't make it in college. So I'm like, I'm going to prove them. Like, I don't care what happens. I am not coming home. Like, and that was like, I told myself that. And so I've always been that way where when people say I can't, I'm like, well, bet, you know, that's sort of.
Tell you.
Exactly. And so I was like, okay, well, let me try this Cooley TV thing again. I had let the domain name expire. Thankfully, it was still there. Bought the domain name, got the cheap website, like a little WordPress site just to talk about what we wanted to do, rebuilt that, and applied for this other competition. And I won this one. It was this long, drawn-out process to get the money. But I was like, okay, so maybe this is something. So it was just me sort of just trying again. And I think a lot of times we do hear no's. As an entrepreneur, that's just something you have to get used to. I get no's all the time, even after all the accolades, all the things that people have seen about Clay TV. I got like 2 no's this week. So it's for funding, for opportunity. So it never quite goes away, even when you've hit like a certain success level.
No, I think you said some important things there that, you know, you don't let those no's derail you. Like, you have a mission, you're going to get to that end goal that you have. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs or people doing things in general, I think we need to have that in us as well, because it is tough trying to run your own business, because like,
yes.
you think you're doing good, you're at a certain level, so you may think things are easier, which some stuff it is, but you're still going to get those no's. Like, you're still going to have to like pivot and think outside the box and, you know, still get people to believe into your idea and your vision. So I think that's super dope that you actually kept on going, because probably if it was me, I would have been like, you know what, maybe I'm a little crazy. But then I would have been like hitting myself later on, a couple of years later, with all these other streaming services. I could have been like, damn, I could have did something good. So I'm happy that you kept on going, despite all the stuff that you went through, because that sounded like you had a tough, like, couple of years to get through. So
yeah, it was tough. Even 2 years before that, my mother-in-law, she had cancer and she had passed away. And then after, and so it was just like this really crazy time. I also tell people that the teens of the, you know, like that decade was, it was crazy. You know, it was very stressful, a lot of illnesses in the family. I got sick, family members got sick. Like I said, my dogs were sick. It was just insane. My husband got sick at the end of that time, end of the teens. And so, and then also trying to run a company, a very early company, basically with hardly any money. It's very tough. And so I would say I started out that decade with my mother-in-law being sick. And so not that long into marriage, and then you're having to be a caregiver to your husband's mom. And after we went through the experience, I was like, I can probably do almost anything, because we were her full-time caregivers. But my dad, it was a little bit different. You know, our goal was to try to save his life. And so it was very stressful, but it was the whole goal of life-saving. For his mom, it was really about end of her life, hospice, and that's caring for someone who's dying. It was mentally, emotionally stressful being like a full-time caregiver. And after we moved to Buffalo, my husband and I moved to Buffalo. He's from Buffalo. Oh. And when that experience ended, I was like, we can probably do anything now. Because if you can get over that, first of all, still stay married, number one. And then number two, just how emotional it was. I was like, okay. So even when the darkest moments with Cooley TV, I don't think nothing's really compared to sort of what happened when my husband and I were caring for his mother. And then for 2 years later, for my dad to get cancer was even more devastating. But you know, that's life. And I think as we get older, we realize that things happen, and it just makes you stronger.
No, it definitely makes you stronger, and it probably built you up to be better prepared for everything that you're taking on with your business. But because I was going to ask this question in the end, because I think what you're doing is just so amazing, and everything that you built. So do you, because I know it's really hard when you're in it, do you take time to like sit back and be like, yo, I did this, like, this is amazing? Or have you not like really processed everything that has happened?
I haven't really processed it. You know, people are like, wow, you built really something really amazing. I was up to 4 a.m. Okay, so I don't feel like I have a cape on or anything like that. I'm just trying to, you know, keep things going. But I think we should do that. I think, you know, it's something I'm really bad at. And I think also as an entrepreneur, the reason I don't do it because it's such up and down. Like one, literally, it's not even like from day to day. It's minute to minute. One day you hear the best news, like you won this competition, and literally the next one is something else. Like case in point, a couple of years ago, I was at this pitch competition and I was about to go on stage. Like literally, like they had us in order and I was just scrolling my phone. I was super nervous because it was like 600 people in the audience pitching for $10,000. 600 people. It was at Harvard Business School.
Harvard? Oh my gosh.
Yes, yes. I mean, I was a ball of nerves. Like, and so I remember like scrolling, just you know, looking on like social, just trying to get my mind off of things. And I started checking my email, and literally right before they called my name, I see an email for another thing I applied for. And it was like, you know, usually you get an email that says, update on your application. You already know you lost. Like you already know that. Because typically if you read. Exactly. If you see congratulations, like yes, but if you hear update on, okay. So that's what I saw update, you know, on. I was like, this was something I really wanted. And it was like, we know, we really appreciate you. And did it. So literally when I finished reading the email, closed my phone and like, and now up next, Deshauna with Quitly TV. And I literally, you know, you hit this bad news and you have to go on stage and like, and perform like you're.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Wow. That's life of an entrepreneur.
No, it's so crazy. Like even for me, like what I have to do is every time something good happens or like even like doing the show and like getting people to come on, like I have to celebrate that as a win. So I write it down. It's like in my gratitude jar, like I'm happy that that person actually said yes to come on the show, or I got like sponsorship for the Crown Project that I do to help kids and stuff. So I write everything down, and then days when things aren't going well or I just feel like, you know, I'm not getting anywhere or I'm progressing, I have to like take those little papers out and read them to remind myself like, okay, you're doing it. You've been doing it because you're just always just on the go all the time. And like you said, there's a lot of ups and downs. And sometimes the downs can just seem like it's just so much more than you winning at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's hard, but I wanted to go back a little bit because you did say that you had a magazine at one point. So what was the magazine about, and did you study TV and film? Like, how did you go from a magazine and then getting into, like, streaming?
Yeah, so I studied communications and print journalism at Jackson State University, and I thought that's what I would be doing. I thought I would be a journalist. I love writing. I love storytelling in general. And as a kid, I really liked writing novels and short stories. But as I got older, I was like, okay, can I really make money? Of course, there are lots of people who make money as full-time writers. But as someone who was an avid reader, well, I was still an avid reader, but not as much as a kid. Like as a kid, I read like 10 books in a week. Like I don't have much time to read like I did as a child. But as I was getting older, I used to be so interested in the lives of people. Like it was more than just about reading their books, but I also wanted to know more about them. And once I started reading like autobiographies or the biographies of certain writers, I'm like, wow, they're tormented. You know, they're broke. It was just very, very depressing. At least some of the really like historical writers from back, you know, when you're a kid, you're reading sort of things your school tells you, or you find things at the library. Not like now where you go on social media, and there's so many like, you know, things you learn about, and the world is just really more open to you. And so I was like, well, do I want to be a novelist? Because like half of them, they're drunks, they commit suicide. I'm like 12, you know, reading these stories about like these tormented writers. And that's when I started to, you know, really switch and say, well, maybe I should be a journalist. And it made me think about when I learned about Emmett Till. I learned about Emmett Till through Jet Magazine and how powerful. I remember how it impacted me 2 years earlier when I was 10. And so from there on, I decided to really go, I'm going to pursue journalism. And that's what I did in college. When I was at Jackson State, I worked for the local or the school paper, and then ended up working for the Clarion Ledger, writing obits, not the most glamorous job in the world, but But hey, everyone else was working like these little low-end jobs. And I was working in a newspaper. And so from there, I thought that's what I would do. And my big vision was always to start an online magazine. And so when I moved to the D.C. area, that's what I didn't do it right away, but I ended up working for an organization where I was like a manager, so I could manage a team, manage writers, just manage a whole publication in the department in charge of budget. And I took that job specifically so I knew how to manage. And so within a few years of working there, I did start my online magazine, and I really thought that was going to be my life's work. I had a radio show. It was a weekly radio show in D.C. on 89.3 FM. The magazine was called Empower Magazine. The radio show was called Empower Hour. I actually had an award ceremony called the Empower Players Awards, which is like a scene in Heroes, but locally for people of color. And I really thought that that was what I was going to be doing. But just in media, it's just so hard to make money and monetize. People don't want to pay to read. And so, and I was starting to dibble and dabble a little bit into video. I was doing some video things on YouTube, and I had this show called The Social Activist. So I would like volunteer at local places in DC and film it and try to get people. Cause I before I started Quiz TV, like that was like my thing. Besides having my online magazine, I was an avid volunteer. I would homeless shelter, whatever. Like I love to volunteer. I love to get back. And so I love to get back so much. I actually created this show that actually filmed me volunteering and interviewing people who were either participating, who were recipients of those who were actually volunteers as well. And I really loved doing that. And as I started getting more into video, the whole idea for Clue TV came in my head. I also did it, I did my first documentary. Now, mind you, I had no experience in film or television. I took some courses. I went to community college. I went to Jackson State, finished and graduated, but I went back to community college and took some courses in film production, video editing, and documentary. I took a documentary class. And so I just really wanted to learn, because when I was at Jackson State, I studied communications and I didn't have any of the skills. And so I said, well, I'm just going to take some courses. And then I took another production class for DC TV. And with all of that, I did my documentary. That's pretty much all the experience that I had. Once I finished my documentary, the whole thing for Clay TV was really itching for me. It's like, should I be doing this? Should I focus on this? And I made a decision. Do I, keep pursuing Empower Magazine? Do I pursue being a documentarian and be a documentary filmmaker, which is something I still really, really want to do? Or do I create this space for other content creators through Quilly TV? And I just decided to focus on Quilly TV. And that's kind of where we are today. I had no experience. I didn't know anything about licensing. I didn't know anything about acquiring content. I really went in very blind. I'm not a technical founder, so I couldn't even build it myself. I didn't know what I was doing, but I just, took a leap of faith.
But then that shows you like that this is meant for you, right? Because even though you didn't have that experience, you didn't really know what you were doing, it kind of all worked itself out to like be what it is today. So I think that's amazing, because what is for you won't stop. Like you will get to that point. So that's amazing. But even before creating the platform, you were creating platforms before and kind of like building kind of like a whole like media company, I guess, in your own way, with like the award show, the radio show, the magazine and everything. So you've been doing it for a while. And
yeah.
Well, that's amazing, actually. And I wanted to ask too, did you have like any mentors or anything that you could like eventually go to that would be able to help you out with some of these things?
So early on, I didn't have any mentors. I mean, I have people now who I can call on and say, hey, what are your thoughts about this? But early on, it was literally just me just trying to figure it out. It wasn't like I don't know. I'm still not really well connected in the industry. So it wasn't like I could go to people and say, hey, I have this ideal, let's try real, over brunch. I live in the DC area. I don't live in LA. I don't live in New York City. And so I just figured it out. But now I do have some amazing mentors who when I'm looking to do some new things, I do ask them about it and they give me their feedback. But I think at the end of the day too, I remember I heard an interview from the founder of Spanx, and she didn't know if the first thing about merchandising or anything about retail, and she just built what she wanted. I think a lot of times, and of course I think that you should do your homework. Like I said, I remember taking classes to learn about video and audio and things like that. We also do a lot of research online. And I think that it's, sometimes when you know too much information, you expect things at a higher level. It may be less likely to grind it out with a little bit of resources. I've met so many people who've been trying to build like something similar, and they've worked for these major media companies, like major like television companies, and they haven't really been able to pull the trigger because they're looking at what Netflix is doing, what these big companies are doing with multi-billions of dollars, versus saying, okay, how can I just do this down and dirty and make it happen? Because they're so used to the big budgets, they're so used to what they're seeing in other places, and they can't even fathom, you know, doing something for a little bit of nothing. And so while I think it's great to have mentors, at the end of the day, you build what you want to see. And that's basically what I did. And I've made a lot of mistakes, but at the same time, it's been a really amazing educational roller coaster.
But I think that's the best thing too. And like, I know with mistakes, like a lot of people don't want to make them. They want everything to be perfect. But I feel like sometimes when you make mistakes, like that's the best thing, because that's when you like learn the most. You learn the most when you fail, and you learn the most when you make those mistakes as well. So I think that's good what you said, because a lot of people feel like, okay, no, I need to have a mentor, or I need to have a certain amount of like money or a certain amount of like knowledge or something to get something done. And I feel like when you have that mentality, sometimes it takes forever to like jumpstart to like,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, I agree, but I'm one of those people, so I'm working on that. I also saw on, I saw it first on Instagram on the page, that you all are working with comedian Lil Rel. So I thought that was really cool. So, what is his role with, Quelly TV, and like, how did that partnership come together?
Yeah, so Lil Rel, he is our head of comedy, and the partnership came with him just sending Quelly TV a DM last year.
Wow.
Yeah. It's people like, you know, it's interesting to start Quelly TV. You need to find a celebrity. You need to like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to, dear, you know, Donald Glover, my name is Deshaun Smith. Like, how does that even, like, how do you even do that? You know, and most celebrities don't want you in their DMs like that anyway. And so, I've had people like approach me in the past, but nothing really ever panned out. And so Rel, you know, he DM'd Quelly TV, and typically I'm like, you know, if a celebrity reaches out, I'm like, hi, you know, thanks for reaching out. I'll, you know, forward this to our founder and CEO, you know, make it like, you know, it's some big team.
Yeah.
But this time I was like, nah, hey, I'm the founder, you know, do you want to chat? And so we just start having conversations. And that's literally just how it started, just having conversations. I always tell people it's almost like marrying someone in a way when you bring on a partnership, because everyone may not fit for you. And so at the end of the day, especially since I had conversations with celebrities previously, I just wanted to make sure it was the right fit. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times as people who aren't celebrities and we want like certain endorsements to make it, we work out of desperation in a way, which I used to have a desperate energy of like, you know, I just need this person, I need that in order to be successful. And so when I had started conversations with Rel, it's a very different type of energy where, okay, hey, maybe it may or may not work out, but either way, you know, I'm going to keep doing this. And so it just all worked out. You know, he was asking about our comedy section. I was like, yes, it's kind of tumbleweeds. Like we have some stuff, but you know, nothing really like, we have some really good stuff, but it was very, very small percentage of what was in the rest of our library. And he was like, I really think I can help there. And so I was like, do you want a title? You know? And so we were trying to, came with some really like, I say whack name, cause I wanted something really cool, like curator of comedy, like some type of, you know, comedy curator, you know, something. It was something weird. He was like, that's a lot. He was like, how about just head a comedy? It's like, okay, we can. We can just, no, I was trying to think of something cool. So yeah. And also too, like him being, you know, honest and be like, yeah, I don't like that name. So yeah, that's pretty much how I started. And, you know, since him coming on board, we have maybe about 25 content creators who are comedians, whether they're stand-up, you know, they have short films, web shows, animation, sketches from all over the world. Like literally, you know, we have something from Europe, you know, we have something from Tanzania, and of course, you know, content from the US. So it's been really great so far. I'm really, we're really excited to be working with him.
No, I think that's so cool that he actually messaged you through a DM. Like, normally they get like their people to contact like your people type of thing, but he just went and he did it, which I think is so cool. And then it also reminded me too when you said like reaching out to celebs, because I don't know if you saw like when T-Pain had announced like he did.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
All those people were reaching out to him because it goes into their like request folder.
Mm-hmm.
So you might have been reaching out to people and they probably wouldn't have saw your message too until like months later, if they even discovered that,
right? Yeah,
such a tab,
because he had stuff like 2018. It was like years.
And then he had like an apology tour. So he had like an Instagram live where he invited some of those people on to apologize to him to them because they missed out like on an opportunity to work together. Mm-hmm. Try to like, you know, save those opportunities. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, I wouldn't know too how to slide into a DM to get a celebrity. Yeah, that would just be like beyond me at this point. But I think that story is super cool.
Yeah, I mean, people do all the time. It's just something I haven't. Well, I mean, I DM'd like two like celebrities like 2 years ago. I'm not gonna say who, but like they in the course didn't get back to me because someone suggests you never know you to your trust. Like, well, I guess you never know. And but then I say, you know what, you know, whatever's meant to be will be, who's ever meant to organically connect with me, what happened. And so I've just been sort of living off of that and just letting things naturally take its course. Same thing with mentors. I used to be dying to find mentors. And then almost like when people want to be married, like they're, you know, looking and searching versus saying, okay, I'm just going to let life take its course and whoever's supposed to be connected to me, they will be. And that's how I've been living my life.
No, definitely. I agree. Cause yeah, you just need to kind of like let go, like just surrender and then let things just fall into the place naturally. So I also wanted to know too, because I'm going to be watching this weekend because I want to like take in all this content. I think it's so cool because you have like documentaries, there's like a section for kids, there's a section for comedy, there's web shows, like there's everything that you could imagine is on the platform. So do you have any suggestions as to what I should be watching this weekend?
So I have a lot of amazing content. And I always tell people who interview me, it's like, oh, it's like they're like my children. You know, if I name one, it's like 430 children. I can't like name just one.
It's a lot that's on there. So I'm
yeah. We have 430 content creators. We have over 500 titles on the platform. But I will say, you know, there's a cute animation that's in French. It's called Vanille. Okay. And it's super, super cute. And so even though it's like a children's, like it's about a little girl and she goes to visit her aunt in the Caribbean and they're all beautiful chocolate sisters, and they have this beautiful hair, and then something tries like steal their hair, and because she doesn't like her hair because she's mixed, and so she, you know, she tries to straighten it and everything, and then her father ships her out because her mother passed away. Her father ships her out to the Caribbean to basically embrace herself, and so it's a really cute short, and then it's like 30 minutes short. Then there's the Women's No Fire. I always suggest that one. It's a really great documentary about the coup that happened in 1898. For, you know, those who know about U.S. American history, you know, years after slavery, you know, decades after slavery, Black people were trying to really build themselves up, and they built these communities and built these businesses in a matter of decades, right? And then there are these white people who were jealous, and so just like what happened in Tulsa, this one happened in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I always tell people, we try to focus on Black death and suffering. So you want to see a lot of imagery of Black suffering and death. The whole goal is just to educate people about what happened to these people, so people know that this is a thing, and that historically Black people have been terrorized, you know. And so it really does, it's a really great investigative type of documentary by a brother who's from North Carolina, who learned about it and wanted to tell the world about what happened in Wilmington, you know, in 1898. And there's another, it's a comedy that's on Clay TV called, what is it called? Look, I'm just trying to remember. Africa United. Okay. Africa United is based in Rwanda. And when we think about Rwanda, people think about genocide, right? Yeah. What I like about this film is nothing about genocide. It's about a group of kids who like soccer or football, as we say, or football, as they say, outside of the U.S., but we, you know, we call it soccer here in the U.S. And they just want to, they want to go to the, what is it called? What's the big game?
soccer at all.
Okay. I can't think. The World Cup. Yeah, the World Cup. So they, and so they're in one, and they're trying to go to South Africa, and by any means necessary, by foot, by car, by boat, they travel to South Africa to go to the World Cup. And it's just a really good, feel good story. It's not, there are no child soldiers. There's, I mean, it's nothing really crazy happening. It's just a really good feel good film. And so we have films like that, but we have so, so many. I wish I could name all 500 plus, but those are some ones to start off with.
No, those are good suggestions. I'm definitely going to check it out. And I do like the fact that we're seeing stories from all over the world. Because one of the things that I kind of made a point of, like starting last year, especially with everything that happened with like George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor, is I'm tired of them showing like us in pain. A lot of shows that came out recently, I refuse to watch it because I'm tired of these type of stories, and I'm tired of seeing those things because those are triggering. I know there's effects on our subconscious and everything. So I'm really happy that there's somewhere where I can go to receive these Black stories and learn about, you know, my history and everything like that, and not be traumatized in a way from seeing those scenes and those pictures and things like that. So I think that's very important. So thank you for, you know, being conscious of that and bringing us like a diverse stories from all over to see that. And just like you said with like Rwanda, for some reason we're still showing pictures of them looking like it's like a third world like war zone and things like that, when it's not, you know.
Right. I mean, they're really, in the last like decade, they've done a lot. I mean, it's been, they, I mean, like technologically and everything, you know. So they're definitely like a one of those come up countries.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think we need to see more of that and kind of change the narrative of what we see. Because unfortunately, in like big media places, they're still writing these same stories when things have changed within the last years. So I'm super happy about that. And I also wanted to ask you, because you do take in stories from all over, is there a way that people who do have content, can they send it in to the platform?
Yeah, so on our website, you will hit mission and then submit. And from there, you see guidelines on how to submit your film. If it's a film, if it's like a documentary or like a short or full-length feature film, it has to be in a film festival. It does have to be like Sundance. It could be Gary, Indiana Film Festival. For us, we just want them, want people to have seen it or thought it was good enough to be shown in some theater.
Okay.
If it's like a web show, we don't care about that, about it being a festival, because there aren't a lot of web shows. A lot of festivals don't take web shows anyway, so we don't care about that. And then for Rails channel, you don't have to worry about that either. But our website basically mentions all the details on how to submit your film or show.
Perfect. And is there anything that we can look forward to coming up in 2021?
Yeah, so we're going to be making a few updates to Clay TV. I won't get into a lot of details, but we will be having some new apps coming up soon, possibly adding some audio programming as well, a new platform. So I'm really excited about some changes that are happening.
I love that. I can't wait for like the audio portion too, because that's huge. So I'm excited about everything. Like I said, I am going to be watching Quelly TV all weekend long. So I'm super excited to get into those suggestions. So if you could just give us lastly, like where to go to sign up and that information, and how can everybody follow you?
Yeah, they can follow us on all social media channels. It's at KWELITV. That's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We are on TikTok. We're just not doing much there quite yet. Look out for that maybe later in the year. And then our website is www.kweli.tv. Okay. And we're on Roku, Apple TV, Amazon Fire, Android TV, iOS, Google Play for Android as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for all this information. Thank you for sharing your story. I think it's super amazing what you've been doing. Even the stuff that I discovered today that you've been doing before starting the platform has been super, super amazing, also inspiring. So I want to thank you so much for coming here today and speaking with me. Loved the whole thing. So thank you so much, Deshauna Spencer. This is The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
The Morning Detour on CKUT 90.3 FM.